My mission with the 10 Crutches podcast is to help people come into the present, to explore what that means, and to think about what gets in the way. As any parent knows, the present isn't only, oh, wow, this is like present moment. Ooh, wow. You don't get those kind of moments, maybe, if you have a little break. You have shopping for food, doing laundry, taking care of a household, new clothes for when the kid grows, plus whatever work you're doing to bring in money, navigating all the issues the kid may have while growing up, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It can rarely feel like you are in the moment with your kid. When you are, that's great. But you do have to plan, and you are often aware of the larger picture that kids don't yet have the capacity to be aware of. I also assume everyone who's a parent has a parenting philosophy they use, whether it gets articulated or not. There is likely some system of beliefs you are following, guidelines, principles, as you do your thing as a parent. Like, maybe your parents did such and such with you, and you didn't like it, and you vowed you'd do it differently when you had a kid. Except you find to your dismay, sometimes you're doing pretty much the same things that your parents did. I remember sometimes even hearing my father's voice come out of my mouth. I was like, where did that come from? Well, obviously, I know where it came from. It came from him, through me. Or maybe you did like what your parents did, but for example, technology changing all the time, or perhaps your kid might have a different personality than the one you were expecting or wanting. And now you have new situations, new decisions to make that your parents never dreamed of, that you weren't prepared for. It's easy to find yourself raising a kid in a way that isn't working out as well as you want. And if it is working out really well, why not be open to a couple new things that might help it work even better? I hope these things help you make sense of what's happening as you parent, and I hope they help you be more present with your kids. So that's what I want to talk about today. Hello, and welcome to the 10 Crutches podcast. My name is David. I'm glad you're here. Tip number one, mothering and fathering. I think understanding the difference between mothering and fathering is essential. So I say this knowing there's a ton of dispute about gender and what it is and what it isn't. None of that's interesting to me in terms of parenting. Maybe a different episode would be the right time to go into gender and what the meaning of it might be. But for understanding mothering and fathering, it doesn't matter at all what you have between your legs or how you identify with it or any of that. As far as raising a kid goes, this particular discussion of mothering and fathering has nothing to do with who's a man and who's a woman. I just want to present the archetypal images and then take it from there. When a baby is growing inside of a human body, that gives you a great picture of what it means to be mother. It means you surround the baby. You provide physically for the baby. In this case, you provide all the nutrients it needs. You take away the wastes it doesn't need. What a nice thing to do. The space for the child inside this body is so quiet and warm and dark and safe. And then once the child is born, the reason this image is so important is because the child still needs this kind of care and attention. But molded and shaped according to the development of the child, the circumstances you're in, personalities, etc. But the all-encompassing love, the nurturing care, they are still needed by the child. So breastfeeding or feeding with a bottle are extensions of this central image. Feeding a child can be done by a man or a woman, by someone with a penis or a vagina. I trust you can see mothering by this archetypal image definition is gender independent. The one who gives this kind of care can be anyone who has it to give and wants to give and sees that the child needs it. The father, that archetypal image means you are waiting outside the pregnant body for the child to be born. That's the position of father. And that means father is the one who stands between the rest of the world and the child. It's up to the father to protect the pregnant woman from whatever dangers there might be and help there be a safe space for the child to be born into. The father introduces the child to the world, stands between the child and the world, and between the world and the child. The father, archetypal father, not the person with the penis, the function of fathering is to be between the child and the world. So now, to me, we have some useful definitions. When you're giving the kid a bath, singing a song with them while they soak in the tub, maybe playing with the rubber duckies or something, that's mothering. Whatever your gender is, that's the mothering action. That's the mothering archetype. The space is safe and warm and filled with care, and it's fun. Taking the kid to the first day of kindergarten, that's fathering. That's being the intermediary between the child and the world. Choosing to send the kid to school rather than homeschool. Whatever goes into that decision, you are making decisions for the child and helping the child navigate the larger world step by step as they develop. So while you are doing this fathering of sending the kid to kindergarten, you may pull them aside and give them a hug and whisper something in their ear and give them a little bit of mothering. I think this very simple point of view can really clarify things for people. Is your kid getting enough mothering from enough people? Who's doing the overall fathering? How is the fathering split up, if it is? If the kid is crying on the first day of school and the mother of the kid feels guilty about being a bad mother, to me, that's a misread of the situation. You're doing fathering in that moment. Sure, there might be better ways to prepare your kid for school, but that moment has nothing to do with mothering. Mothering, nurturing the child. Fathering, helping the child navigate the world. Mothering, surround the child with as much love as you can. Fathering, acting as the ambassador between your child and the world, and between the world and your child, kind of like a concierge. Eating popcorn, watching a silly movie, cuddled up together on the couch, mothering. Opening a savings account with your kid, teaching them about money, fathering. By knowing what you are doing and when, you can orient yourself simply and quickly. You can keep a balance much more easily. You can fluidly shift as needed. You know where you are with your kid and what you're doing. Tip number 2, interpret and articulate what your child is saying so they are as intelligent as you. Children, particularly the younger ones, don't know how to articulate the reasons for what they want or what they don't want. For a 2-year-old, what they want or what they don't want is usually quite clear. Give me that! Or maybe just, no! But children, particularly these younger ones, often don't know how to articulate the reasons for what they want or what they don't want. And if you try to engage with them, you may only get a, oh, because! You can possibly train them to say something or other, but their little brains have often not yet developed the capacity to intelligently explain and articulate their position. And they're certainly not going to understand your position. Let me give you an example. Let's imagine a 3-year-old kid playing quietly with some blocks in the middle of some imaginary scenario. You know, maybe there's a couple little cars moving around, little play people doing something or other in the kids' imagination. You had told them that morning about the party you're all going to in the afternoon, and then you just lost track of the time, and now you're getting ready to go in a rush, and you just scoop in and pick up the kid right out of the middle of their play. You pick him up and start carrying him out to the car. And the kid is very upset. The kid is screaming, "No, no, I don't want to go." Stuff like that. You can say things like, "You know, you're going to have a great time. And you know what? So-and-so is going to be there. And you will love playing with so-and-so." And try to distract them. And this often doesn't work because it has nothing to do with the reason why the kid is upset. Or you might say, "I told you this morning we were going to the party this afternoon, so stop your screaming." And this doesn't work because it also has nothing to do with why the kid is upset. So as the kid is still screaming, "No, I don't want to go," they have their way of stiffening their little bodies and making it near impossible to get them into a car seat. And so now you find yourself saying like, "Well, if you don't stop screaming, if you don't let me strap you into this car seat, well, then I'm going to." And the power battle is on and the whole thing is a mess. So let me play once again the name of this tip. Interpret and articulate what your child is saying so they are as intelligent as you. When you catch yourself fighting with a 2 or 3 or 4-year-old, you may very well have taken a turn down the wrong road. Pause for a moment. Pause. And in your mind, give your child a voice that they couldn't really have themselves, but you give them this voice based on what you know about them. And you do this by looking at it from the child's point of view. What would the child say if, all of a sudden, they were a reasonable and articulate adult? It might be something like, "Hey, listen, I know you told me about that party this morning. I remember that. But when I'm in the middle of imaginary play like that, I forget everything. I'm not tracking time. That's your job. If you don't give me a 5-minute warning, if you just come and snatch me right out of the middle of my imaginary world, of course I'm going to be upset. What else could happen? If you were watching a movie and at some exciting part, how about I just pick you up and start carrying you to the car?" If you imagine your kid saying something like this, which is a thing the kid might reasonably say if they knew how to articulate it, well, now you have something to engage with them that isn't only a power game. Now you have a genuine negotiation. You have their point of view and your point of view. If you imagine that they just said that, well, you might apologize to them for taking them out of their game so suddenly. And you might promise them that the next time you're going to leave time for them, you're going to really do your best to leave time for them to come out of their imaginary world. People like being seen. They like being acknowledged, even at 2 years old. So try this the next time your kid is upset, and you're in a power battle, and you remember this tip. You go, "Oh, what was that? Articulate the kid, huh? Just where are they at? What are they saying?" Because all that's coming out of their mouth is the "no, no, no." What would they say if they could really articulate it? If there were really some discussion, you still have the authority. You're still the adult. You still have to make the decisions. But at least it's done in some sense of cooperation with this child who you're caring for. Tip number 3, the scooter metaphor. Imagine you're in a park. You are walking through with your kid. They have a scooter. You don't. You're just walking. They want to ride ahead. You certainly don't want them to get out of sight. And even if you could still see them, you also, you don't want them to be so far away that you can't run there quickly if you need to help them. So there needs to be a limit. They want to ride ahead. It's a beautiful day. You can see clear down the path you are walking on. So you might tell them something like, you see that tree, that one up there? You can ride to that tree and then come back toward me if you want to keep riding, or just wait till I get there if you don't want to ride anymore. But don't go past the tree. To me, this is a great metaphor to understand the limits and responsibility. If, for example, your kid is in middle school, you're also going to have to set limits. By using the scooter metaphor, by understanding the essence of it, you can say things like, this is just like when you had to stop at the tree with the scooter. The limit is you have to be home by such and such a clock, whatever the limit is. You need a way to talk about limits with your child, and you need a way to understand and explain limits to yourself. Limits, boundaries, these are essential in the development of a child. The child will always need some way to know how and when to stop. In our culture, with such an emphasis and the need at this point for economic growth, limits often get lost. How does one know when to stop? This is why you set limits and why the child needs them. Tip number 4. Aim for the day you stop being a parent. If we can keep going with number 3 for a moment, the scooter metaphor, the day you stop being a parent is the day they ride off on the scooter and they no longer have to ask you about or even tell you about where they are going or how far they are going or when they will be back. As a parent, it's up to you to make up for the incredible loss in our culture, the incredible loss of clearly knowing the difference between a child and an adult. There are plenty of indigenous tribes that do it much better than us. They have ceremonies. I read about one, for example. They would break the tooth off of a 13 or 14-year-old boy so that they were just like all the men who had a tooth missing. That's how you know you were a man. The mothers would no longer expect to be called mother. And to the father, the new man was one more man among the men of the tribe. Their status changed clearly at a given moment, at a given time. It changed clearly from child to adult. But our culture lacks that. Is your kid starting college? Are they an adult? Probably not if they still live with you, but probably yes if they're going and coming and doing all their things on their schedule whenever they want, but not because you're still paying the electricity bill and their college tuition and. So are they? When are they an adult? If not, what are they? If yes, how do you know? I think this is hugely confusing to both children and parents. What criteria do you need to know for sure that your child is now grown up? That they no longer need parenting. They need you. They need the relationship. They need your friendship. They need your advice. But they no longer need you to have the authority of a parent because they're an adult. Some will say the child always needs the parent and that the parenting will never stop and that the authority will never stop. And I do think there is something to be said for that. But a parent with authority who is raising a child, an adult who is taking care of a household, say by paying electric bills, doing the shopping, making sure a leaky roof gets fixed, raising the child, the children, etc., etc., this adult or the couple needs to be gradually teaching the child more and more to take on this adult responsibility. Doesn't make any sense to me to be raising a child without helping them grow into ways that they take care of the household that they are in, whether it's your household or the one that they have when they leave your household. And you also teach them to take care of the community that they're in. Take them to volunteer somewhere and learn about helping others, about helping making the community a better place. But when are you done? We all need friends and coworkers, companions. We all have relatives, cousins, aunts, uncles, etc. We all need people who know us and love us and care about us, people who can help us out in a pinch, and people who we can help as well. But none of these friends and relatives have authority over our lives. Maybe you ask sometimes for advice from the people in your life, but you never think they're going to tell you what to do and then you obey them. I think it's like that when you're parenting a kid in this society at this time. There comes a day, you'll still be connected, you'll still care tremendously, but you won't have any more authority. You can just say what's on your mind and then wait to see what happens with that adult who used to be your child. Plan for that day. When you are raising a child, you know that that day is coming. Perhaps you make a ceremony or a ritual to mark it. But all the raising of the child, you do it with that day in mind. Way in the back of your mind when the kid is two, perhaps more in the front of your mind when the 16-year-old storms out of the house. When is that day? So that's it. That's my four tips. I'm going to put a few more in the show notes, and I could possibly do another episode like this if people ask for it. So if you do want to hear an episode with more parenting tips, just let me know. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you next time. Please visit the home of the 10 Crutches podcast at 10crutches.link. That's 10crutches.link. The book that inspired the podcast, a book I wrote called 10 Crutches for Walking in the Present, is available for free download on the website. While you are there, please take advantage of two ways to contact me. You can send me an email, or you can make a voice recording. If you have a great question, I may be able to use it for the podcast. Also on the website, you can visit the archive to hear any published episode and see show notes for any and every show. Thanks so much for listening. And once again, thanks so much for listening. And I won't say it once again. See you next time.